This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to A Catholic's Perspective, the podcast all about being a young Catholic surviving in a secular world. Today, I have a special guest with me, a friend. I think we've been friends for about 2 years now since the book club first started. And I have with me Jarell Guzman. Welcome. I'm so happy you could finally join us. We've been talking about this for forever.
So as stated, my name is Jarell Guzman. I'm currently a seminarian for the Diocese of St. Petersburg. And yeah, it's crazy to think, it has been 2 years. I think it was fall of a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And man, the book club was so amazing. A lot of times I can get caught up in myself and just like let myself get lazy. So when I go round up to the start of the week, it's like, oh wait, I need to read those chapters for Screwtape Letters or for The Imitation of Christ. It's like, yeah, let's get something going here. So I'm currently in my third year of what we call the discipleship stage of seminary, of diocesan formation. And so currently I'm working towards my undergraduate in philosophy. I've been here, born and raised in Tampa, Florida. Entered the diocese right out of high school. And I graduated in 21 from Jesuit Tampa. And have been rocking and rolling since. This year I've had the opportunity to head our apostolic committee at the seminary. So the less glamorous part of that includes serving the sick in our community, in our seminary community. So if guys are under the weather, we make sure there are priests that can bring communion to them. And we have guys bring them lunches and dinners. And we also set up our semi-annual or biannual commency, where we have a sophomore from the community share the vocation story and to upwards of like 200 guys that we had last spring. Wow. And so been doing that.
Didn't
lately.
You just do that?
So we had, I think our total count was like 170, 180 guys coming from throughout the Southeast. And so I was like the MC for that weekend. So I led in prayer, helped serve, and then went off for 30 minutes about my vocation story.
So. I think you sent that to me. You sent me a couple of them, but I listened to them and I was just like, ooh, Jarell's going to be a really fun preacher. Are you going for priesthood? Is that what your end goal is?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So it was really funny. After my talk, there were a couple of times where like I started breaking down. That didn't really happen in practice, but afterwards, like I was already kind of, not that I was like sad or anything, but it was just like, it was really invigorating. And I'd already cried twice during the talk. And then the rector of our seminary comes up to me. He's like, Drew, we're really proud of you. And he like taps me on the shoulder. And like, I literally just sunk in my seat in the front of everybody. but one of the weirdest compliments I got from that talk, I went to lunch later that day, and there was a priest that came up. He's like, man, you really reminded me of like a Baptist preacher. Like, you're really lively. I was like, thanks.
Thank you. I love that. It's kind of like, you know, Keith Nestor, good friend of mine. It's like the same vibe. It's like very, you know, you could tell that Keith was a Protestant pastor, but he does it in such a wonderful way that he takes the energeticness, that's not a word, from that, and he puts it into Catholicism. I feel like you do the same thing, and it's like really cool to kind of like witness that, because we don't have a lot of people who I think are able to be super passionate. I mean, I've been to a lot of talks and things, and not to say that they're boring, but I mean, you want to be able to get your audience into what you're saying. You want to be able to get them excited about the faith and stuff. And so I've only met a very few amount of people besides you who have been able to do that. So it's really cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. But yeah, I love hearing about it. And I know that a lot of people are discerning the seminary right now. And so I guess kind of just jumping into your story, tell us a little bit more about yourself and your background, education, whatever you're comfortable with sharing.
Sounds good. And so fun little startup about my background. Both my parents are from the Philippines. And interestingly enough, both of them were deeply discerning religious life before they got married. My dad was thinking of joining an order by the name of the Redemptorists in the Philippines. And so while he was in high school, he actually entered the novitiate in the Philippines before his family moved over to California. And my mom wasn't necessarily looking at an order, but she felt really called to the religious life as well in the Philippines. But because of family, providing for her family, she ended up going to become a physical therapist over in America. And so really funny enough, a lot of the Catholic community, the Catholic country of Philippines, a really tight-knit community, especially around Manila. And so they both got to know each other in elementary school. And when it came time for my dad to move over to the Philippines, my mom stayed back because he moved over in high school and my mom stayed back until she had finished college. And so when she had the opportunity to move over to America, she had a map of the United States. And my dad is in San Francisco. And my mom, she knew my dad throughout elementary school into high school, and she didn't want to seem too clingy. So she was like, I want to stay kind of far away, but I don't want to be too far. So I think Florida is going to be the nice choice. It doesn't seem too far on the map. So apparently they didn't have a scale on the map because my mom moved to Tampa, Florida. And
it's a little far.
A little bit. Eventually, my dad moved over with my mom in Tampa. And so they got married there. And about 10, 15 later, a few years later, they had me. And so coming from a very strong Catholic background, cradle Catholic, interestingly enough, a lot of my background wasn't really with the diocesan priests. Mm-hmm. The first parish we went to primarily growing up was Most Holy Redeemer. And it was in the diocese I currently am studying for, but it was led by Franciscans. And it was a really amazing experience. The Franciscans were only there until I was in second or third grade, but it was a really beautiful experience. And looking back on it, it's goodness gracious. It was so normal to me, but the pastor there, Father John Aurelia, he served with Padre Pio.
Oh, wow.
And was firsthand witness to Padre Pio's stigmata. And it was so odd. Me as a child, it's kind of normal. Of course my pastor served with a saint.
Just whatever.
and so it was around the time I was at Most Holy that my mom and I reserving the early years of my childhood is my oddly sanctoral life of my mom has a bunch of Facebook posts from when I was younger that in the most humbling way I could say, I just sound straight out of a hagiography. There was a Facebook post from I think 2007, and she was I was literally four or five at the time, and she was she just literally posted on Facebook I was wondering today with my son I wish we could be those in the Old Testament that could hear God's voice. And of course 5-year-old me and the deep wisdom that I had gained just blithely said but we can I don't know why we need to pretend we're not the Old Testament. We have the Bible. God speaks to us through the Bible. And I remember my mom telling me that literally when I was interviewing for the diocese, there is no way I, as a 5-year-old, said that.
That is so funny. Baby Jarrell dropping bombs there. Oh my gosh.
So literally a couple years later, we're at the cathedral in our diocese, and right at the consecration. Oh, so another story real quick about me just being randomly Christ when I was young. We were at the cathedral, and my mom and my dad are looking for like where the main church is. And so they're like scrambling around for a while, and they lost me. And so they end up finding me in the cathedral. And so they asked me, like, Jarrell, like, where have you been? And again, just me casually quoting scripture as a 7-year-old, don't you know I should be in my father's house? Like, and so literally that mass, at least from what I remember my mom saying, that mass right at the consecration, I like tugged on her dress, and I like whispered in her ear, I want to do that when I'm older.
Aww. Little baby Jarrell.
And so, that like oddly like sanctoral life was kind of followed by like my kind of like what I like to term like my paganized days. I wasn't necessarily like worshiping Baal, but like I just entered into this like kind of life where, man, like I was pretty set, and like I was very affirmed, especially through the Capuchin friars at my first parish, like very well affirmed like in my call as a priest. I remember the day the Capuchins had left Florida at the last mass at, on a weekday that the priest who had served with Padre Pio gave. He had called me up to the front as like an 8 or 9 year old, and he said, guys, in front of you is a future priest. And like I just like blithely forgot about that for the next like 8 years of my life. But in that time, after the Capuchins had left, I had a little bit of contact with diocesan priests before I ended up moving to my current parish, Mary Help of Christians. And it was there that I was able to encounter the Salesians. And it was through this time that I got involved with the summer camp there. And I got to see like a really beautiful aspect of just like the swath of, so to speak, priesthood, like through both religious life and the diocesan life as well. And it was at Mary Help that kind of, to fast forward up into my high school years, was like really instrumental in me being able to grow my faith life. And it was incredible. Like over the summer, I cradle Catholic, went through Catholic school all my life. But there was something really incredible over the summer, being able in a sense to continue that and to have opportunities for daily mass, being able to kind of help like catechize as a counselor. And it was just a really beautiful opportunity to just kind of like work out kind of like where the Lord was calling me. I'd had contact with the Franciscans. I had contact with the Salesians. Going down the list, I'm missing the Dominicans and the Jesuits. And so in high school, I went to Jesuit Tampa. And the reason I like to call that situation from like about my 9 to like 17 to 18, my pagan days, is just I really allowed myself to just like sink into kind of an indifference to the faith. We'd go every Sunday. We'd pray rosaries every now and then when we had the chalice for vocations, kind of fitting. And it didn't necessarily like seem like a lived experience for me. The faith was pretty much relegated to Sunday. Like I had this really cool thing going on over the summer, but there was something that just didn't click. And so one quote from Pope Benedict XVI's encyclical God is Love that kind of really perfectly encapsulates like what happened in my, so to speak, reversion and this kind of like lightning rod of my faith. He has this line early on, I think it's like in his introduction, where he says, to be Christian is not the result of an ethical choice or a lofty idea. It is an encounter with a person, an event that gives life a new meaning and a new horizon. And for me, especially growing up, like it was so easy to allow the faith to just simply be an ethical choice or to be a lofty idea. Like it wasn't something I could encounter. Yeah, like, man, it's really nice to serve, but it just seemed like an ethical choice of like, do I want to sit with my parents or do I want to just do stuff up there? And there's something so incredible, particularly like right before COVID, that hit this like lightning rod of an encounter. And so in the midst of this kind of like dry spell from like close to a decade of like the middle part, half of my life, and the sense of just like allowing the faith to simply be an ethical choice, to simply be a lofty idea, and it was this radical moment in the middle. This was right before ever all the lockdowns hit, and I was in my Christian morality class at Jesuit Tampa, and I was like, I always kind of ignored the theology classes there. But there was one day that really piqued my interest. We were going through the moral teachings of the church, and lo and behold, we hit this like lightning rod. I hit this encounter like with truth, with Christ, through my theology teacher, and he just like simply said, "Yeah, the church doesn't support same-sex unions," and that like really hit. For me, the like on Sundays, just like in simple talkings on about the faith with my family, there was a sense of like same-sex attraction was just like simply an accepted reality for my family. And so it really piqued me. It was like, wait, there's something that like I've held to just kind of be normal, but like my teacher is here saying that the church doesn't support it. And so I approached the teacher after class, and he was very, very good. He didn't just like hit the hammer on me and just like pointed to the catechism and said, "Yep, like it's right here. I don't need to tell you anything." And it was really beautiful the way he catechized me about it, because he framed it like specifically from the point of view of love. That like the church does this specifically out of love for those who have same-sex attraction. And like I can't even remember how like blithe and like how like meaningless my retort was to that. But he was just patient. He was like, "Yeah, like we can talk about this more if you want to, but yeah, just like study up on more and like what the church has to say about this." And so this encounter, this event, like was very, very tangible. It was an encounter like on this like really like meaningless day seemingly during the week at Jesuit High School, but there was something so beautiful about it, and it was something encapsulating of like, man, like I was a junior when this happened, and like I was thinking to myself, like I'm gonna be in college in a couple years, like is this faith that I've held to simply be an ethical choice and a lofty idea, like do I actually believe in it, or have I just like grown up in it? And am I just going to fall to the wayside, like I've seen so many people who've graduated do so? And lo and behold, a couple weeks later from that, the lockdowns hit. And for all the bad that provided, it kind of gave me the opportunity to hit a lot of Zoom classes on mute and just like absolutely like blast Catholic podcasts left and right. I remember throughout from that spring on, it was just like constant like Catholic Answers and Matt Frad just blasting on like through my headset, and just getting to learn about such great truths of the faith. And it was a really incredible experience of not simply letting it be a lofty idea, that these ideas like actually challenged me, of being able to investigate the truths of the faith and ultimately like enter into deeper relationship with Christ. And it was really incredible. Right as the summer hit, I'd just been listening to hours on end of these podcasts. I've been like soaking up. I was like a sponge, like soaking up like hours upon hours of Catholic media, and I just needed to wring myself out. And so like what better way to do it than at the summer camp that I'd been working at my entire time in high school? And very fittingly, because it had been the middle of COVID, the parish didn't want to bring a lot of people from the outside. They just flew in 5 Salesian novitiates for the entirety of that summer. And so I was like, from like 7 a.m. to 5 p.m., I have these guys who are about to enter into formation with the Salesians. I just like absolutely went hog wild. Just like basically like listening to the same Matt Frad podcast, like literally 3 hours on end, and just like going to each and every novitiate and being like, did you know this? Did you know this? And I remember distinctly one moment of my counselorship, I guess that summer, I was talking to one of the novitiates at the barn, and like we were overseeing a group of kids, and we were like going deep, like philosophically, like we were talking about the Aristotelian golden mean and like how to apply that to evangelization. Like we can't be like Bible hitting Protestants, but we can't be like hellfire and brimstone, like only Catholics. Like how do we like mend this together? And it was like a really like edifying talk. And then we like get snapped out of it, and the woman working there was like, you guys know you're supposed to be watching the kids. And I was like, oh, we'll talk about this later. I'm sorry.
That is so funny. I think honestly, like so much grace. I mean, looking back and I think that's something that's so important is when we look back on our lives and we think about, you know, our childhoods and stuff, there are little signs there of what God has wanted for us in the future. But as we grow up and we're adults, we kind of put God on the sidelines because new interesting things pop up, school, friends, you know, experiences. But when we're kids, we're so, you know, accepting of God's words and of God's love, because like God says, you know, let the little children come to me because the kingdom of heaven is theirs. I mean, because they don't have these issues we do as adults where we hinder ourselves from him, whether it's subconscious or on purpose. Little kids are just like, yeah, why not? Why can't we do this? Like, what do you want? You know, there is nothing to stop a little kid. I should know. I've babysat 4 little girls. There's nothing stopping them. And so I think it's just so beautiful that you were able to grow up in this space. And then even though you did have that moment of, you know, oh, is this really for me? You're still questioning. You know, it's not like, yeah, no, this isn't for me after the first thing. Because you said that the same-sex attraction thing, that was a normal thing in your family, right? Like they just accepted that. Mm-hmm. So to be kind of challenged on that, you know, and then to learn from that and then be thrown into the Catholic sphere of things with COVID and everything, I think it's just, you know, it's really God's providence when we look back on that, you know?
Mm-hmm. And yeah. I love that you brought up the point about childhood, because the framework of every single vocations talk I've given, it has been precisely from Mark 10:15, like unless you become like this child, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. Mm. And one of my favorite theologians, Hans Urs Balthasar, has an 80-page treatise like simply on that verse. And one of the lines that I read literally my first night in seminary and kind of like draws a beautiful light into what you had just said. He talks about this idea of like, what does it mean to be a child? And so he responds, to be a child means to owe one's existence to another. And even in our adult life, there never ceases to be a point where we can stop giving thanks for being the person that we are. And looking back on what you said, like there's such this wonder of childlikeness, that like in being able to see the faith in its like fullness, that you do recapture that childlike joy of gratitude, like first and foremost to God, but also recognizing like in the great expanse of providence, like the very specific people that very much so could have been another person, but it was this specific person that guided me on that path. And that, man, like there's something so beautiful, especially in me being a diocesan seminarian, this idea that unlike being a religious priest, which I'm not here to say I'm better than, or like a live in a religious order, that there's something specific about diocesan life where the Lord calls you to serve a specific place, namely the Diocese of St. Petersburg for me, and a specific people, namely the people of St. Petersburg, rather than anywhere else in the world. And for me, especially looking back on that very like truncated, like it was like 9 months before I heard the call, so to speak, and that it was in and through the diocese, it was in and through my encounter with people in the diocese that allowed me to hear God's call, that allowed me to be more open, like in my reversion, but also like to the fact that like, man, like the Lord placed me here and not there. And like through the light of providence, like that's been something that has allowed me to kind of gauge my like the vocation to which he's called me to.
Hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I also always wondered, you know, was there a reason you were specifically called to being a diocesan priest as opposed to maybe a religious order of priesthood?
Mm-hmm. So to continue on with narratively after the summer, it got to this like really shaky point of like, oh man, like my buds I got to talk to you for like 8 hours a day are heading back to New York at the end of the summer. Like, what am I gonna do? And so lo and behold, at the barn where I got in trouble for not watching kids, one of the other counselors there who wasn't mad at me, invited me to go to a youth group in our diocese. I was like pretty much down the street. And it was in and through that youth group where I kind of like really felt a call to the diocese proper, that it was really odd. Like these novitiates, they weren't old by any means, but they were just older than me. Mm-hmm. So there was something really strange about like getting to just like be among my peers and still get to talk about the truths of the faith, in the context of youth group, even outside. I remember really distinctly this one really odd moment my senior year where I was up at like midnight, and I was just like really hopped up on this one Joseph Ratzinger quote, and I put it in our group chat, and like out of nowhere there were like four or five responses like jumping in the group chat, and like literally at midnight there was just like a huge swath of like discussion on theology. It was like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. and so not to say like the youth group told me I was gonna make a good priest, but there were more than a few people there that like, as I was just like going off on these tangents, they would just approach me. I remember particularly this one moment, I think it was sometime in December, and we were going through the liturgy, and like as per most youth groups, like there were a couple like short answer questions. I'm not one to take the short and short answer. Everybody like gave their one or two sentence response. And then I rose my hand, and like everybody just like slacked off and was like, okay, girl's about to go off. And for 10 to 15 minutes, I just like went like absolutely bonkers about the liturgy, to the point where like 10 minutes in, I like paused and everybody was like, okay, we can go back to regularly scheduled youth group. I just walked over to the bookcase in the parish room and picked up The Spirit of the Liturgy by Joseph Ratzinger.
Yeah.
And just read from it for like 2 minutes. And so like, I was like, so like emptied after that, where it's like, gosh, like none of that made sense. And like, these people are about to chew me out. And so I just like literally like sunk in my seat for the rest of the night.
Oh my gosh.
So after youth group, I'm like, I'm kind of like leaving with like my head over my face, like trying to sneak out, and I get approached by this one of the people from the youth group, and they go, Jarrell, like, man, it felt like I was watching a Father Mike Schmitz video. And I quite literally collapsed to the floor. and just like simple like moments like that, where where I have this semi joking but also like very biographical shirt that says Shoddy said I'd make a good priest. And like just really it was really incredible like through this experience at a parish where like I was looking around, it was like, man, there are a lot of my peers here that I think I'd have an opportunity to be a great husband with. And then like every time I turned around, it's like, man, Jerome, have you thought about the priesthood? Yeah, like after a youth group the other night, I think you have what it takes to be a priest. And so it's like through this encounter, in a way, like almost like being able to, I won't say necessarily like balance my discernment, but the Lord like saying that the door, yeah, by all means, here is the door to marriage. But at the same time, like I said earlier, like being able to serve this people rather than any other, it was precisely through the people in this youth group and this diocese, that really kind of like called out my vocation in a really incredible way. And a beautiful thing the church kind of distincts is that like my time in discernment isn't necessarily like only mine and the Lord's, like the church has a place in it too. And there's something really incredible, especially through like a jury of my peers, so to speak, that we're able to kind of like call out in a sense, this vocation in me. And so in recognizing that, the great like providence that like, man, like I could have been anywhere else, but I was in the Diocese of St. Petersburg. I could have been in another group that was just like completely turned off to my 15-minute liturgical rants. But it was like precisely in and through this youth group that I happened upon because I was talking about the Aristotelian golden mean one random day at camp that really kind of opened up the sense of, yeah, I think there's something really beautiful about parish life. There's something really beautiful about the community that was forming at that parish. And that ultimately, like, yes, I could marry one of these girls and I'd be amazing with that. And I'd love to have a family. At the same time, I'm looking around every Sunday and I'm seeing like upwards of like 200 babies in pews. And I'm like, it'd be great to be a father to all these kids. And it was like in and through that where kind of this budding sense of spiritual fatherhood really came out in that place as well.
Wow. That's beautiful. And I love what you said. It's like, I could have my own, but why not have everybody's? Like, I think that's so incredible because even the priests at my church, you know, they have natural fatherhood. You can tell that they would be wonderful fathers, and they are. Like, that's the main thing, is that they are. It doesn't matter if you're 80 or if you're 2 years old or if you're in utero. Like, they are wonderful fathers to help you on your, you know, your spiritual journey. But also, when I go to spiritual direction, at least, my priest, he helps me with secular things too. If I'm having issues with a friend, if I'm having issues with my parents, if I'm having issues, you know, in regards to my state in life, whatever it might be, he can take the spiritual side of it and tie it in with, you know, the worldly side of it, I guess. I don't know. But it's just such a wonderful gift that priests have, that they are fathers, you know, and I love that about them. And so I guess, you know, with the priesthood, I've heard that numbers are dwindling. I think it just depends on which diocese you're in and you know, what order you're in. But what would you say to those people, you know, who are feeling this tug to religious life for men or women, but they also feel this tug towards marriage and they don't know, you know?
Mm-hmm. This is something that really hit last year. I was just reading through this document that the Vatican released on celibacy in the formation of priests. And this goes like and hinders out to all. Like including religious life as well. And there is this line that like literally like put me in a state of silence for like close to an hour. I remember reading that paragraph and just being like, I literally just need to sit down. And so it talks about the sense of this pull of marriage. And the Vatican states, for those in formation, a desire for marriage is not an indication that you aren't called to celibacy. It just means that the sacrifice of celibacy is going to be that much more of a sacrifice. And that like hit like a ton of bricks, because like there's this like inkling side of me, especially entering seminary, of like, yeah, like if I do end up like having a really, really strong desire for marriage, then that's the ticket out, right? Sorry, I just keep randomly quoting, but Balthazar has this amazing book on vocations called The Christian State of Life. And in it, he has a section that's literally called How the Call is Made Known. And he has this beautiful part of like, God can work in a myriad of ways. Like he can't lay out kind of this path for one person that's gonna like ring true throughout all the ages. And the call could happen like in by a gentle invitation or a compelling challenge. And so reading that, I was already a year and a half into seminary. That was a very compelling challenge to me. That of course, like you can't enter into priesthood and the religious life with this kind of like ire towards marriage. Like God has made it a sacrament for a reason. It's a holy institution for a reason. And like to tell you the truth, like I've in my time of seminary, like the beauty of marriage has just like butted up all the more of being able to witness like such great families, even my time in seminary, that it opens up like the sense of I would have been like I'm at a better vantage point of witnessing to the beauty of marriage precisely in a paradoxical way, like being out of it, like much in the same way where your spiritual director is able to kind of like give you this like wide scope precisely because he's removed from the situation. And to analogize that to marriage, like to that the desire for marriage in the seminary, like I've said this a couple times publicly and I've yet to be challenged on it, so I'm gonna roll with it. Who would have been more challenged by a desire for marriage than the one who created man and woman himself, like Christ on earth? Nobody would have been able to see the fullness of the beauty of marriage more precisely than our Lord. And that the fact that he was able to be on earth and live a life of virginity and chastity, yeah, like there, I can't imagine anybody else in the world who would have had a greater desire for marriage, because he precisely was the one that instituted it as something holy in creation. And so it definitely, it's not to say it's easy. Like, it's not to say like, yeah, I can just brush it off like another like fly off the vocational shoulder, so to speak. But there's such a beauty in being able to realize like the more I have this desire, the more I see the beauty, like I'm entering into a Christ-likeness. I'm called to God willing at the end of my journey as a seminarian to precisely be Christ to the world. And how can I do that if I'm like, oh gosh, like marriage, why would I want that? Like, what, like marriage is like such that's a lower tier option. Like, no, like if you see it in the fullness of its beauty, then that's something you can precisely sacrifice for the good of those that you get to be available to.
And I think that's so beautiful, because we've all heard those people like, oh, my girlfriend broke up with me, I'm going to seminary. Oh, my boyfriend broke up with me, I'm going to be a nun. It's like, no, that's not how this works, sweetie. I mean, maybe, I guess it's a sign from God that person wasn't for you and maybe religious life, but it's probably not the best way to make that decision. But I definitely think that as we go in our generation, you know, Gen Z, I think we're going to be the ones who really bring Christ back into the world, who are really pulling people into faith. I mean, Father Mike Schmitz, his podcast was number one. I think, you know, this is going to be the turnaround that we need to bring God back into society. And we'll work on Gen Alpha. Gen Alpha needs help. But I feel like Gen Z, we have our issues too. Every generation has their issues. But I definitely feel like ever since COVID and Gen Z went through COVID, we've mm-hmm. either turned closer to God or we've completely fallen away from him, but I feel a majority of us have turned towards him. So that's something that I definitely look forward to in the future. And hopefully we can have you back on in the future too, Jarrell. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your story. Where can my listeners find you? Is there anywhere they can follow you?
So as of now, no. But I do currently have a podcast by the name of Seminarian Sensibilities. As of a couple weeks ago, we just hit Apple. And so I'm on Apple and I'm also primarily on Spotify. So if you can hit a like and hopefully a 5-star there as well, that'd be great.
Yes, absolutely. Go follow his podcast. I was listening to it on my way to a dentist appointment, I think. And I was just like, this is so fun. It's like having a conversation with some seminarians. It's like so cute. And just like, y'all are laughing. I think it's just, you know, we need more podcasts that are like conversational and upbeat. So definitely check that out. And well, thank you so much, Jarrell, for hopping on here and sharing your story. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. And with all of that being said, guys, I hope you learned something and hopefully this inspired you. And I'll talk to you guys in the next episode. Bye. Do you have questions or comments about today's episode? Email me at thereligioushippie@gmail.com or leave a voice message at anchor.fm/thereligioushippie. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Thank you for listening. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Please be sure to rate and review this episode. This podcast is produced by Amber Rose and distributed by Metacortex Publishing. This podcast is copyright by The Religious Hippie NFP. Any previously trademarked or copyright content is used by permission. Information and opinions in this podcast should not be construed as medical advice. Please be sure to visit the official website for The Religious Hippie at thereligioushippie.com or find me on social media for other unique content. Thank you.